Thanks. I'm Greg. I'm an alcoholic. That was a great lead, Mike. It's a tough act to follow. But yeah, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's like right around May 7th of 2009. My home group is also Space Coast YPG. We meet on Saturday nights. I've seen some of you guys out there. I'd love to see you all. And I have a sponsor, this guy Alec. He spoke at your anniversary, this past anniversary. He's a great guy. I talked to him today, you know, and just try to stay in contact with him, man. Those are three suggestions, you know, that I could, like, make from a podium, you know, that I feel, like, concrete about. Like, you know, like, after that, it's, like, kind of take it with a grain of sand. You know, I try to corroborate it with a big book after that, but it's, like, I don't know, man. Thanks, Isaac, for asking me to speak. You know, I love AA, man. It's like the most important thing in my life, just like Mike was talking about. It's like the brightest spot in my life. You know, I don't like talking from a podium, you know, but like nothing gets me excited about driving across the state, you know, in two pickup trucks with 11 guys, you know? We were talking about like four cars. I'm like, no, you know, it's like, that excites me, you know, man? Because, like, that's where, like, the bonds that I've made in AA have just, like, blossomed incredibly, you know? I didn't think AA was going to be a bright spot in my life, man. I was dying of alcoholism for, like, a little bit, you know? And I was just, like, going to AA, drinking every day for, like, a while, like, 2 years, you know? And I, like, wanted to catch sobriety. You know, I wanted to hear the thing that was going to make me sober. You know, but I never wanted to actually be like happy, joyous, and free. I like distinctly remember being in a homeless shelter, you know, and like a guy coming in and bringing like his message of hope. He was like a big book guy, right? And like his message of hope, and I was just like, what a loser. You know what I'm saying? I'm in a homeless shelter, you know, and like this guy is taking the time out of his day to like do something, you know, for AA. And I just couldn't understand. I couldn't understand why he would do something like that, you know? And I've had, like my ideas and my outlook on life has changed, you know? And I get it, man. I understand. My parents were in AA, too, you know? And, like, everybody knew I was a loser, you know? And guys would pick me up for meetings, like my dad's friends and stuff like that. I would, like, just get out of jail or get out of treatment again, you know, and I tell the guys, like, oh, I don't know, I think I'm trying to get to a meeting. And, like, I was just a lost cause, you know, and these guys would pick me up and take me to coffee afterwards, and I couldn't understand it. I was like, I'm such a loser, man. But I think I get it today, you know, to, like, maybe see some sort of hope in, like, another guy's eyes and know that, like, I can recover, you know, and, like, you can too, you know. It's just a trip, man. AA is just, like I said, man, it's the bright spot in my life. I would do anything for it. I think it's like the ring that holds my life together. You know, I've seen guys like get stuff back in their life and AA goes to the wayside. And you know, that's not my experience yet. It's just been like, I get stuff for me getting like a license. I got a license at like 18 months and I was like, God is working in my, you know, like stuff like that. It's like little stuff, you know. It was like valid license, insurance, and a car in my name. I was like, man, I was like a terrible new guy. Just like, you know, I was driving around other people's cars, just like all, you know, no license. Just like, I don't even care, man. You know, guys, this guy's sober longer than me, and he's giving me the keys. I'm just like, all right, man. You know, I'm doing something right. You know, I was just like doing whatever I wanted. You know, but. But AA has always been like the focal point of my sobriety. You know what I'm saying? Like, because, bro, I didn't come into AA and just become like pure as the driven. I did not come in and just like, boom, like, you know, white light, I'm never doing anything bad again. I've done a whole bunch of stupid stuff. I'm probably going to do more stupid stuff since I've been sober. I've had handcuffs on me since I've been sober. You know, it's like circumstantial, but whatever. yeah. It's like, it's whatever, man. But I think I work a pretty good program. But yeah, it's like so. Here's I'm from New York. I'm born and raised in Long Island in Smithtown. You know, it's like a nice neighborhood. I think my parents worked hard to get us there. You know, like I said, my parents were alcoholic. my dad was a drug counselor as I was growing up, you know, and he was like, he like worked in the recycling industry or whatever. It doesn't matter. We weren't rich, but we kind of scraped to get into like a good neighborhood, you know, with like a fence and stuff like that. They were trying to shield me from the wrath of alcoholism. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we went to like the best public school in Long Island. And my parents had told me from a young age, I grew up in AA with my parents too. You know, my mom was like the cake lady at her meeting. And I knew a little bit about AA. I knew they chanted, you know what I'm saying? I knew they met in church basements. I knew that they were pretty decent people, you know? I knew that alcoholism was genetic, you know? But I had like a formal education as well. You know, where I'm from, they did the DARE program, you know, where the officer would come in and say, just say no, you know? And like, there was like a couple different methods you can employ, you know? The broken record, no, you know? And like, cold shoulder, you know? And like all this stuff, you know? And this is your brain on drugs. There was that commercial, you know? And I had like the formal education of just like, all right, man, I'm gonna stay away from that stuff, you know? I have red hair, you know? And I felt that's why I felt different from the rest of the world growing up. You know what I'm saying? I went to like this school, and like I think I might have been the only redhead. I was just like, oh man, I was like popular and stuff like this. As a little kid, I hung out with the cool kids, but I just felt like just like this disconnect with everybody else. Do you know what I'm saying? Where I was just like, oh man, you know, we picked teams for kickball, and it was just like so much anxiety associated with that, you know. And I was like good at sports, you know, I was good at baseball growing up. I was on the travel team and stuff like that. But even if I was like in right field, you know, where like not coming out, I felt like everybody was just waiting for me to screw up, you know? And like, that's kind of how my life went, you know? And I had friends and this, that, and the other thing. I hung out with the older kids, and we had a fort in the woods, you know, and they were older, and they would drink, and they're like, hey man, you should have a beer. It'll put hair on your chest. I was like, no, no, you know, like, I employed the methods that I, you know, was educated with. And I missed out, man. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I felt like I missed out. You know, those guys had a blast that night, and I was like, damn, man, why was everybody trying to gear me away from this? And I have, like, a terrible memory, but I do remember, you know, like, the first time I drank, I faked it. You know, I was scared. It was like a wild turkey or something, I don't know, but it was in my friend's basement bar. And I might have like faked it a little bit, but I remember the first time I got drunk, you know, and I got, alcohol does something for me. Do you know, like once it got in me, man, nothing else mattered. You know what I'm saying? It's like that magic elixir. It lit me up. You know what I'm saying? From the inside out, I felt like just like a new ease and a new comfort. I was just like, I got a break. Do you know what I'm saying? I got a break from what was going on inside of my head, you know, and I needed that. It was like, thank God for alcohol. Do you know what I'm saying? Because I don't know how much longer I could have went just thinking about myself all the time, you know? And like that first night, I like overshot the mark big time though. You know, like I drank, and then like I was like drinking like cheap beer at the Smith Haven Mall in Long Island and in the woods. And the night I ended up like in the fetal position in the mall parking lot, just like dying. You know what I'm saying? I was just like, ugh, puking up like bioluminescence, and I swore off alcohol because it was like terrible. You know, that night I was like, I am never gonna do this again. You know, and then I woke up the next day, and like I've been stuck in like the obsession to drink alcohol since. And like once that obsession kicks in, man, I'm defenseless. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I would swear off alcohol every single night. You know what I'm saying? Like solemn oaths. Throw away the bottle. Do whatever I gotta do. I wake up the next morning before my eyes open up. It's like I'm in the garbage pulling out that bottle. I'm doing whatever I gotta do to get that next sip. And it's screwed up, man, you know? I don't know, man. I graduated high school. I did all that, this, that, and the other thing. And I thought that I was like cheating the game, you know? Like I thought that I was like partying just like everybody else. I got arrested at like 11th grade or something. I sold drugs, you know. I got arrested selling drugs at a Dunkin' Donuts parking lot, and that was like my introduction to AA, like as a as an attendee, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, this is, you know, I can't relate to these guys. I'm 16 or something, and I got arrested selling pot at Dunkin' Donuts. It was like, just don't sell drugs there anymore, you know? So I did that, and I had to go to an outpatient thing with these guys, you know, who were like from the hood, and they had just gotten out of jail or fighting off prison bids. And this guy was like drooling, and I remember like this stuff was clear as day, you know? And I didn't relate to anybody, you know what I'm saying? And the counselor bothered me. You know, his name was Nathaniel, and he kind of identified some things in me that, like, I could not. He's like, man, this is going to be so bad for you down the line, this, that, and the other. And I was like, whatever, dude. You know, I'm here to get my papers. I kept on drinking, you know. I passed my little court thing. I was in drug court. I kept on drinking. After that, not too soon after, like, I graduated drug court and did all my things, I realized that, like, I probably had a problem with alcohol, you know. And I would, like, willingly show up to AA or CA or NA or whatever, you know, whatever, like I just needed an answer somewhere, man. And I would show up and like I would like be like, Dad, I'm going to AA, you know, got $5, you know, and I would go and I'd get there early because I heard you're supposed to get there early, you know, and I'd like get there early and sit in my car and just like watch everybody, you know, and like go in. And like same thing like that treatment center be like losers, you know? It's like this guy's got announcements, really. And like I would do the white chips and none of that stuff, you know, it just wasn't catching, man. I had to find a sponsor, you know. Mike was talking about that list. Who am I gonna ask? That guy, I don't know, what kind of car does he have? Is his wife hot? How long is he even sober? This, that, and the other things. It's like, oh man, I gotta get out of here, you know? Boom, one more drink, you know, and that's just really what I needed, man. I needed to just continue to drink, you know, because like I wasn't done drinking, you know, and I needed to have every drink that I took, you know, and that's just the case, man. If I wasn't willing to do anything. You know? And that's what sobriety took for me, man. That willingness to do what I was so unwilling to do before. You know? It took some other things, too. Whatever. I've been arrested, a bunch of times. You know, I've been to Rikers Island. I've been in Nut Wards, Bellevue Psych Ward, you know? And all that stuff, like, meant nothing. That physical stuff means nothing, you know? The last time I got arrested, I had just been released 36 hours prior. I got rearrested on the same thing. I wasn't, like... whatever, you know, like, it was whatever, dude, you know, but the judge was like, bro, you know, it was like, my, like, radio set was still, like, I thought I was doing, like a humble act, you know what I'm saying, of, like, I was giving away my radio to, like, this, you know, the inmates, so I was like, yeah, man, you know, like, give it to the CO, I was like, I'm not gonna need this anymore, I'm 36 hours back, I'm like, I need my radio back. And the judge had offered me 9 months in jail or 9 months in a treatment center in the Phoenix house. And I was adamant about going to jail because I didn't want to do treatment. That wasn't on my mind anymore. I couldn't get sober. I've never done probation. I was smart enough to know that I have no shot, you know? So I'm just like, whatever, man, I'll stay in jail, you know? And I end up leaving jail. They put me on medication in jail. The day I got out of jail, I was looking to get my medication, and I couldn't do it, and I ended up getting into a treatment center. You know, that was the last treatment center I've been to in New York. Somehow I ended up on a plane after that. I drank a few times after that. And my bottom is nothing glorious. You know what I'm saying? It's not. There's no fire and brimstone and fireworks and cops and handcuffs and girls mad at me or anything like that, man. The last time, it was like Walmart. It was nothing special. Do you know what I'm saying? It was nothing special, man. But I finally got to a point where I was like just willing to do what I wasn't willing to do before. The pain of being out there made me willing to come in here like one more time. I set my sobriety dates right around May 7th. I remember all my fake sobriety dates, you know what I'm saying? But like this one, it was just like, I know I didn't drink after May 7th, you know? I didn't pick up a white chip this time, you know? Just, like, I had done the white chip thing over and over and over, you know? I went to a meeting. I think my dad dropped me off at this clubhouse by me. And I went to a meeting, and I kind of got stuck with this girl, you know? And she was like, oh, you got to come to this meeting across the bridge. And it's my home group today, you know? And I went to that meeting. I remember a guy, Stan, was chairing it, you know? A couple of you guys know. loser. You know what I'm saying? Like, one more time. But like, man, I was hurting. You know what I'm saying? And I came in and I was too scared. I didn't put up my hand and say, I'm the new guy and I'm thinking about drinking. Somebody help me. And I didn't pick up a white chip and I didn't do all that. But like, I awkwardly walked out of the meeting afterwards, you know, and I held some guy's hands. I was sweating and I was like, I held their hands. And then we went outside the meeting. I might have asked somebody for a cigarette. But like, multiple guys came up to me after that meeting, you know, and approached me. And knew I was the new guy. Do you know what I'm saying? Because like, they were active members in their home group and knew how to see who the new face was, you know. And that was like an uncomfortable conversation, you know. And this guy Mike came up to me and was like, "Hey man, who's your sponsor?" I was like, "You know," I was like, "I don't have one," you know. He's like, "Oh, I could be your sponsor," you know. And this guy appointed himself his sponsor to me. He didn't have the hot girlfriend or the double-digit sobriety or any of that stuff, but he was like the first guy to like selflessly give of himself to me, you know. And he was like involved in this sponsorship family, who were all like working the steps out of the Big Book, you know, which I thought working the steps was going to be like way like more intense. Do you know what I'm saying? Like more than just reading the book. You know, but that's what this guy did with me, man. He sat me down on his couch and read the book. But I don't know, man. After that meeting, he suggested I come out to the coffee shop with them. You know, like forcefully suggested. You know what I'm saying? Like I didn't have a car or anything. You know, so like I kind of just got like taken. You know, and I didn't have a dollar on me. You know, I didn't I wasn't good looking. You know what I'm saying? I had a warrant in New York still, you know? And like, I'm like a liability to these guys, you know? And like, I was like pretty transparent about it, because like, that was like the only thing I felt comfortable talking about. Was like, "Oh, I'm in jail, and you have warrants." And like, that was like my thing, you know? And they're like, "Yeah, man, shut up, you know? Come out to coffee," you know? And I drank some coffee, and these guys were talking a completely different language, a language I've never heard before, you know? Spiritual experience, sponsor, working steps. This girl was like 19 years old, you know, like 3 months sober, talking about how God's working in her life, and she's been relieved of the obsession to drink alcohol. And it was like still pretty heavy stuff to me, you know? And I wasn't necessarily like buying in, but like I was just like so sick of being me, you know? And this guy Mike started sponsoring me. And like immediately, like brought me over, like I had no car. He would pick me up. He lived like two towns over, and he'd bring me over to his house once a week. And he would work steps with me. I've been to 12 treatment centers. Do you know what I'm saying? And I would hear about working steps, you know? And that's not what it was like, man. The guy sat there and read the book with me. Like we switched pages, you know? And like, it's really, like I understand, like I can intellectually understand this stuff, but like it, for me to like sink it in, like the head to my heart is like the longest 18 inches. Do you know what I'm saying? I can read the Big Book all day long, but until I get it in my heart that like I'm screwed, I am completely screwed if I put alcohol into my body, and then I need a complete miracle, you know? And that miracle is not coming from me, and it's not coming from her, you know? Like it's got to come. But like I would never really do that. And you know, I'd go to treatment centers and like guys would be getting girlfriends and stuff. I'm just like in the corner dying. I'm like, "How are you guys doing this?" But like, you know, I would just like find the old guy and leave with him. I'd be like, "You got money, man? Let's go." Yeah, man, so the guy started reading a book with me, man, and that's when my life really changed, man. That's when, like, I became a person who was just, I would just go to, I had been to 1,000 meetings probably by the time I got sober, and nothing stuck. I had never accrued a day of sobriety, you know? And then I'm sitting there with this guy, and, like, I made it, you know, like, I didn't make a verbal commitment with him, but I was like, we were committed to reading the book. He was committed more than I was, which is incredible. Do you know what I'm saying? That guy cared more about me than I did. You know? So he'd pick me up. I was a loser. And he'd put me on his couch and he'd read the book with me. You know? And then, like, we'd do this stuff and we'd talk about God. I was like, "I believe in God, man. I pray all the time to God. You know? If I'm looking for help, if I'm looking to get out of a cop car, or if I'm scared to not make it through the night, I was like, I believe in God. I have no problem with that. Perfect. Move forward. You know?" And we did a third step prayer with him. You know? And I hit my knees with another guy. You know? On the side of a bed or at the side of his couch, I think it was. You know? I've never done that before. You know, invited God into my life like that, you know, and I was tripped out. And then it says, you know, next we like launch onto a course of like rigorous or vigorous action. You know, basically it says like immediately we're going to start doing some stuff, you know, and this guy had me writing out a four-step inventory, you know, really quick. And like I said, man, I've been to enough meetings to know the fourth step, you know? And this guy was just like, yeah, man, we've read the book, and he said it's a grudge list, and write down people, places, institutions that, you know, were going on in your mind, you know, who are you mad at, what's replaying in your head, write it down. I'm going to be in the next room playing a video game. I was like, really? Yeah? And I wrote it down, you know? And then I was like, easy, you know? There was like a page of stuff that mattered. You know, and I was trying to throw some context in there, like five pages. But there was like a page of stuff that really mattered. There was like my mom, my dad, like a couple family members. It was like stuff, you know, but the reasons, I was happy to write that. You know, what it affected was like kind of weird, you know? Because like I was like, what is security, you know? Like what is personal ambition? Like what is that? Where is that here, you know? And then I don't know, man. Right now, my part was like the difficult part. You know what I'm saying? To see my part and stuff. Thank God I had the sponsor, man, who did it, just sat there with me. You know? Because like at that point in my life, where I was at right there, I had a big problem finding out my part in anything. You know? I thought alcohol was the problem. You know, it turns out I got honest with this guy. I have nothing crazy in my life. Crazy is kind of like one of those words, but like, you know, I have nothing traumatic that is causing me trauma in my life. You know, nothing as a child, nothing as parents, nothing like that. Nothing. I was just never honest with another person. Do you know what I'm saying? I would tell you that I was like a badass. I would tell you that this girl broke my heart, but I've never been honest with another person. And I was honest with this guy, Mike, you know, Mike whatever his name is, who is sober a year. You know, not a guru, not anything special. He's drunk right now, you know? And I told him the truth about myself, you know? And then, like, that's, like, when, like, I became a part of AA, man. That's when, like, I can, like, join conversations that these guys are talking about outside the meetings and at the coffee shop. And they're, like, talking about a spiritual experience or working steps or having a sponsor or this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, oh, man, I did a fifth step, too. You know, like, I'm getting some relief, too, man. I'm not thinking about drinking either. You know what I'm saying? And that's, like, incredible stuff, man. Making amends was, like, when I got, like, you know, like, lit up. You know, there was a girl on my thing, and she had an asterisk next to her name. I never stole from her or robbed her or anything like that. She was my best friend, you know? But, like, I just wasn't there, you know? And I had an asterisk next to her name because I wasn't going to make amends to her. I was asking God for help, you know, in, like, the amends process with my parents. Because they love me so much, and they let me sleep in their house, and they brought me back down after I stole all their stuff. But I can't, I'm having a problem making amends to them. So I'm asking God, my God, please make me willing to make these amends. And Beata sends me an email. You know, I haven't talked to her in 5 years. And she said, Greg, I had a dream about you last night. I just want to make sure you're okay. You know? And I was like, oh, my God. And that's when I just seen God working in my life, man. That's like when I seen that God is doing for me what I can't do for myself. And I got to reach out to Beata and be like, hey, you know, I'm in this program of recovery. And there's some wrongs that I need to right with you. And how can I make that up to you? And she said, I love you so much. I'm getting married next year. Come to my wedding, you know? And that might not be a big deal to anybody else in this room. But, like, that moment was just, like, when I felt God's love wrap around me so tight. And, like, I know that there's a way out of this thing, you know? And alcohol's not the problem anymore, you know? And, like, the real problem here is having a conscious contact with God, you know? Like, I need this loving God in my life, you know? Because, like, left to my own devices, I'm completely screwed, man. And, yeah, man, that's the only message I could really give in AA, you know, that's concrete. Come in here, work the steps. Your sponsor doesn't have to be the greatest sponsor in the world. He's just got to be a guy that reads the book with you, hopefully pretty fast. You know, all he's there to do is turn pages, you know, and, like, listen to your inventory, man. God's doing all the work here. I got to get out of the way. You know, I heard somebody say once, God's grace is just raining down on me. I just got to put away the umbrella. And that is so true to me, you know, because, like, I'm the only thing that's blocking me from happiness ever, you know, and it's daily, you know. I've been sober X amount of years, you know, but every day I wake up and I'm there. You know what I'm saying? I'm stuck with me. And I got to wake up and ask God to just remove me from the situation, man, and put you in the way. You know, get me out of the way, put you in the way. Alcoholics Anonymous is designed in, like, a way where it's, like, so turnkey for an alcoholic like myself to, like, continue to do this stuff, you know, to like continue hearing people talk about, you know, what I should be doing in AA. I don't love sponsoring guys, but I sponsor a couple guys. You know, I don't love sitting on the couch reading with them that same book that I've read. I've read The Doctor's Opinion 100 times. You know what I'm saying? I don't love doing that, but I do it because, like, number one, somebody did it for me. You know, the hopeless drunk that I was. Number, you know, just like in Dr. Bob's last message. And it's like, I get to see these guys who are done, man. They don't even have any belief in AA. You know, all of a sudden, they're getting stuff back in their life. Like Mike, man. That's some cool stuff, you know, getting to see guys, like, having their lives restored because of this loving God that they found through AA. It's, like, the coolest thing, man. And, yeah, man, so I have the same home group since that day, you know. It's a young people's group. I'm like, whatever, I'm getting old, but whatever the case may be, you know. I think, you know, I'm sure a couple guys in this group have, like, come to that little, where it's like, what do? You know, but I had an incredible experience at my group. You know, these guys knew I was the new guy. I kind of got chased down. I'm big on chasing guys down. I don't care, you know. But, like, I got spotted. I didn't put up my hand. I didn't do the white chip. I didn't do any of that stuff. And I got approached. And guys knew I was dying. And they were there to give me some sort of a presentation of AA, you know. There was hot girls at that meeting. Do you know what I'm saying? But those guys didn't care about those girls. They came and reached out to me, man. They made sure I got in their car, talked to me about what AA is, and followed up with me. I've done those awkward phone calls from my mom's house phone. Do you know what I'm saying? Hey, it's Greg from the meeting with red hair. You gave me a ride home last night. You told me to call you. Yeah? And they do the work, man. I'm the weird one here, you know? Some guy called me up today and was like, hey, man, I really like what you were talking about at the meeting the other day. I was like, oh, tell me about it, man. He's like, I just had to stay around. You said I got to stay around AA and just get weird. I was like, come on, man. You know, I was like, that was my pearl. You know what I'm saying? He's like, what does that mean? But it's like, man, I just got to get a little weird, you know? I just got to get outside of myself, man. You know, because, like, I could just, you know, contemporary to investigation, you know, that's like knocking it down before I've even tried it. That's like seeing the guy who brought the meeting into the homeless shelter being like, you're a loser. Do you know what I'm saying? Even though I've never even given this thing a shot, you know, the guys who are making announcements, you know. I've been a guy who makes announcements. You know what I'm saying? I can't help it. I get excited. The treatment center. I love bringing meetings into treatment. You know? I love doing some sort of... I do not like to be inconvenienced for anything. You know? Unless it has something to do with AA. You know? And even sometimes it's like... The immediate thing isn't like, man, let's go pick this guy up. It's like, damn it. You know what I'm saying? But it's like anytime I get to do something, I get to do something like that, man. And that's the truth, you know? But yeah, those guys at the home group, man. So my home group meets on Saturday nights for 1 hour, you know, and I heard about getting a home group. And I heard about going to meetings, you know, 90 and 90. I heard about those things, you know? but it became so much more than that. You know, those guys became like Michael, you guys know, like Rob Allen and Stan and a couple other guys. These guys were like 3 and 4 years sober, you know, and they were like just gods. They were like pillars of my AA community, you know what I'm saying? And those guys became like my closest friends, man. I would hang out late, you know what I'm saying? Like I'd hang out until like 4 or 5 in the morning playing video games at this guy's house. And you know, he'd give me his car. I had no license. The little rice burner Honda. You know, I'd be driving that thing home, like trying not to get arrested, you know. And, but getting home and like doing a 10-step with this guy. You know what I'm saying? So, and then those guys taught me a little bit about like what it was to be like a home group member. You know, there was like some sort of ethic going on in that group. You know, that they knew to show up no matter what on an inconvenient night when they maybe have girls or guys or wives or husbands or anything else to do but go to AA on a Saturday night. But those guys were staples at that meeting, and they knew I was new. And the coffee was made, and somebody was chairing, and the chairs were set up, and all this was taken care of for little old me. Do you know what I'm saying? So those guys started showing me a little bit about what it meant to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I didn't know how I had to do. You know, I thought I was supposed to come here and get what I need to get and go on with my life. you know? But like they taught me a little bit about what it looked like. How to make coffee, do you know? How to chair a meeting. I never knew how to do any of this stuff, you know? These guys were doing some things. A guy from over here, Todd, spoke at, I got sober in May. He spoke at a July 4th barbecue we had, you know? And there was this chick in our home group at the time. She was probably like 5 or 7 years sober. And, you know, she was the one who, like, if you're on your cell phone, you'd catch a glare across the room and just know you're, like, completely screwed, you know? So, like, I was scared of her, you know? And she asked me to do the 50-50 raffle, you know? And I was like, oh, no. You know, I was like, this is not a good idea. You know, like, I didn't want any sort of responsibility. I was a criminal. I didn't want to do any of that. And, but at the same time, I was like, all right, man, I'm going to do this 50-50 raffle, you know? And I got to do something for AA, man. And, like, little stuff like that, man. You know, that's why we got a ticket meeting at our group and some, you know, I mean, just passing off the 50-50 raffle tickets to, like, change somebody's day, man. You know, make them feel like a little bit a part of AA. Reaching out to a guy saying, hey, man, cool shoot. There's, like, awkward dudes in AA. We're all awkward dudes, you know? We just, like, learn how to master it, you know? But it's like, go talk to the guy who's reading the pamphlets in the back of the room, you know? Nobody's actually ever reading the pamphlets, you know? It's just like, what do I do with my hands for now, you know? And I don't got to be the guru. I don't have to know page 417. I don't need to quote everything, you know? I could be a week sober or, you know, I was, you know, I mean, there were points in my first year where I was like more like spiritually fit, on fire for AA, helping new guys, happy, than I was at like 5 years sober, you know? Like none of that stuff really matters, but like what am I doing when I'm a part of that group, you know? We get there an hour early and stay an hour late and have a fellowship after the meeting. It's very similar to your guys' meeting. You know, those guys in that group, man, my group turned into, everybody got successful in my group. Not like Rolls Royce and Bentley successful, but like successful, like happy lives, went on to bigger and better things, left me. Yeah. Yeah. But like, we hosted a Ficky Pa, you know, years back. And that's how I got to know Terry, man, and love Terry so much. You know, we would drive across the state all the time, you know, to play cards or go to a meeting and play cards or go to a meeting, have a little sleepover at Mike B's house. And, you know, I love Terry, man. I love him so much. And that kind of stuff happens in AA. You know, I remember the first time a dude told me he loved me. Yeah, click. I was like scared. I was like scared. You know, I was like, oh God. But I know what it's like to love another guy, man. I love so many guys in AA, man. There's so many people in my life who, like, my life is just so full as a result of AA. I was talking about hosting Figgy Pot, and it's like, whatever, man. You know, like, I don't even like Figgy Pot anymore, you know? But but it, like, served this incredible purpose in my life, man, where, like, I didn't know what I was doing. Nobody knew what they were doing. And we were just, like, not smart, you know? But, like, we all came together, a bunch of guys who loved AA, and cared a lot about AA, and like for this common purpose to put on this little party about AA, you know, whatever the case may be, man. Those guys that I host Figgy Pot with or got involved in stuff like that with, I talk to on the regular. Rob Allen moved away like 5 years ago. I talked to him today. He's got stuff going on in his life. Chris Grant, all these guys, man. Joe, all these guys, you know, get involved in service, man. Do the inconvenient stuff. Nobody wants to go to a little, you know, a group anniversary business meeting. What do you really talk about? There's not that much going on. It's not hard to put on a little dinner. Do you know what I'm saying? But it is cool, man, to like give of yourself and get out of your own way for a quick minute. Get involved with some people who have the same love for AA. I don't get this love for AA anywhere else in my life. I've grown to get some stuff back in my life. I went to school, which is a big deal for me, you know, and I associate myself with people who are outside of AA, you know, but I don't have connections with people who are outside of AA like I do inside. You know, it talks about like survivors of a ship, you know, like from steerage to captain's table. You know, when they get on land, everybody has that common bond. You know, and that's what AA is, man. Think about it, man. Think about those people who were on the Titanic. Think about the Titanic. You know, Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, they were in steerage to captain's table, you know? So think about those people. But when everybody's all on land, man, they escape disaster together, man. They have this common bond, man. And it's stronger than anything. I love AA. Man, so me and Terry went to GSO not too long ago, you know, and I went years prior too, man, and there was a meeting in GSO. I went with my girl, you know, and there was a meeting in GSO in New York City. It's like AA headquarters or whatever. We met the president of AA, you know, but there was a meeting there on Thursday mornings, you know, and it's like facilitated by one of the employees, and there was like a couple from Jersey, a couple from Florida, maybe like Ohio and California, and then this one other dude, right? And, you know, everybody was sharing, and this one guy was sitting behind everybody, and he was Polish, and he didn't speak a word of English. And he said, you know, at the end of the meeting, he was like, so I don't under, he whispered to his friend, and she's like, so he just said he didn't hear a word that anybody said during this entire meeting, but he knew that we were speaking the language of love, and he's just happy to be here, man. And I get that, man. Getting to be a part of AA is just like the coolest thing, man. And I love you guys so much, and I appreciate you guys letting me stand up here. I have 5 minutes left, but I'm not just going to babble, so that's it. Thanks.